Welcome back to Four Quarters, Four Questions, Week 8, as we head into Ohio State Week, the date everyone had circled on their calendars. We'll get to that in just a second, but first let's look back at the week that was in Kinnick Stadium and another topic that Adam and I will talk about, including the Big Ten standings, AP poll rankings, and then we'll get into a special guest we've got on the line for us to talk Ohio State. But let's get right into it. Adam, how are you doing this evening?
What's going on, buddy?
Just living the dream. First question, let's get into it. How did you feel about the Iowa game last week?
How could you not feel great about it? I don't even know what else you could possibly say about it, except for that was exceptional. You know what it kind of reminded me of? The 2008 season, we played Wisconsin, and Wisconsin was ranked, and you know, we had beat Oregon State, but you know, it was supposed to be a big game. It was at night in, I believe it was in Madison, and we just came out and housed them, and it was a brutal beating. And, you know, Iowa isn't the same caliber of team that everybody thought that Wisconsin was at the time. Certainly, we already have two losses, so maybe the game wasn't as big on the national radar. But, you know, I mean, this was a huge game against a solid football team, against a good defense, more importantly. And it showed that this is a team that can score against a good defense and really... make plays when they needed to make them and put the game away early against a fairly decent opponent. I thought it was a huge win.
No, I agree, and the stats bear that out. Going into the fourth quarter at 31-0, scoring early, making it 38-0. Iowa adds on a couple scores at the end. That kickoff, you know, it was kind of disheartening because you kind of wanted to end it with a shutout, but, you know, giving them two scores at the end, I'm not going to complain. A 38-14 victory. Matt McGloin once again looked fantastic. Bill Belton took over the role of rushing all-star this week with over 100 yards, three touchdowns. And then, you know, the receivers once again proved why there are some of the best in the Big Ten. Kyle Carter got Big Ten Freshman of the Week with 6 for 85. Allen Robinson got his 6 catches with a touchdown, although he was limited to 39 yards. It was again, an all-around game. And you had to be impressed, although, like Devin said in the recap on Monday or Tuesday, there were definitely portions of the game where they could have been better. So it was a good win, but you could definitely see how they could improve in certain areas.
That's, you know, it's interesting you say that, because when I read Devin's column, which was actually great, I hope everybody got a chance to read it, it kind of reminded me of exactly why Bill O'Brien was hired in the first place. And kind of exactly what college football is. You know, college football isn't the NFL, and so you can't expect college kids with limited amounts of practice time and realistically a limited skill set on the roster to be perfect every single game in order to score points. Inevitably, college football teams leave points on the field. That's just what they do. And for years, our problem has been, if we're leaving points on the field, it means that we are not scoring points. It's really nice to see an offense that, even when it's not working at 100%, can still score enough points to be not only competitive, but to win games. It's really nice to see a team that, you know, we don't have to hope that we can hold an opponent to 6 points in order to come out with a victory. It's just a whole new world, and I think I'm still getting used to it because I'm kind of baffled by it, but it's really nice to see.
So they opened with two losses, and they were very disappointing because they were to teams that they should have beaten, but they were semi-understandable given all of the changes and all of the off-the-field stuff they had to deal with coming into the season, but they're now riding a 5-game winning streak. How awesome does the defense look, specifically the front seven?
They're remarkable. You can't say anything more about Mike Motti than what we've already said and what even Urban Meyer said in his press conference this week. He's the kind of linebacker that we always wanted, that we always want. He's a terrific leader, but he's just a fantastic player. Gerald Hodges is great. You know, Glenn Carson gets no pub whatsoever. But that kid can play. He makes plays. He's a very good player. He's clearly outshined by two Buckus Award candidates, literally named Buckus Award semifinalists.
He's the new Josh Hull, right? Flanked by two phenomenal linebackers.
Yeah.
Just doing his business.
Yeah, and bound to get better, which is nice to see. Him and Mike Hull make a really good combination next year after Hodges and Mahdi graduate.
Right.
I mean, the front four, Jordan Hill is a terrific player. They're getting a lot of pressure. They're really, you know, they're able to stop the run. We always thought this was the strength of the team coming in. That's being borne out here.
No, yeah, I agree. And it's always going to be, as long as Johnson and Vanderlyn are coaching those two positions, you know, somehow they just managed to put seven phenomenal athletes on the field at a time.
I'm still concerned about depth to a certain extent.
Yeah, I am too.
Once the sanctions really kick in terms of our recruiting. Part of the reason that we've been so successful on the defensive line specifically is because we've been able to rotate guys in pretty regularly. If you're on the two deep of Penn State on the defensive line, you're seeing a significant amount of snaps a game. That hasn't changed much this year at all. It'll be interesting to see what that looks like when the sanctions become a little bit more pressing. You know, what that does to our depth and what that does to the performance of our defensive line.
That's true, but like we've talked about before, Penn State is now operating at roughly 70 scholarship players this season. So minimizing by five more, that depth really isn't going to take too much of a hit. Now, Bill O'Brien has a task in front of him as to where he allocates these scholarships over the next 4 years. But Larry Johnson and Ron Vanderlinden on the defensive line and the linebacker core, they've got the bodies there. As long as they stay healthy and as long as they continue to rotate solid players, there's no reason to think that this won't drop off too much. I mean,
right.
You lose all-stars in Mowdy, Hodges, Hill, etc. But the way that they coach players up and the way that the team looks today, a snapshot of the team scholarship-wise, you know, it shouldn't take too much of a hit over the next 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's the concern for me is the guys that they're able to bring in order to keep that performance rolling. And, you know, I wish we'd gotten a chance to talk about this with Rittenberg last week when he was on the program, but my sense has always been that the two most difficult years to deal with are going to be this year because of all the trauma that the program has been through, and then next year when recruiting has been difficult this year because there are still several years before you can get back to a bowl game. But I think as long as we get through those 2 years and the third year on the field, but less so recruiting, you know, those kids will play in bowl games, assuming that they can redshirt on some level, hopefully. Hopefully we have numbers that allow them to do that. But those kids will play in multiple bowl games. They will play in more bowl games than they will not play in. Let's put it that way. And I think that's the key. You know, if you can maintain a reasonable level of competitiveness over the next 2 years, it'll allow your recruiting to stay at a decent clip. And then once we're fully eligible again, or going to be fully eligible, it'll really allow us to land on our feet. But so far, they've been, you know, putting it together this year, which is really exciting.
Right. And they are, like I said, they're peaking at the right time. They're coming into a difficult portion of a schedule that includes the Buckeyes coming in, and we still have Wisconsin and Nebraska to go. So it's good to see them on the positive side of a 5-2 record as opposed to sliding a little bit. So let's get into a little bit more about the Big Ten in general. The BCS has been out for a week now. Obviously, Penn State can't be ranked there. Not that they would be or should be, but one place they can be ranked, and that they are, sort of, is the AP poll. They're allowed to receive votes there because it's the press, not coaches. And they did receive votes this week. They are, if you count them, they're 31st place behind four other Big Ten teams. Ohio State is the far and away leader of the Big Ten at an undefeated 8-0. Michigan comes in at 20th on the AP poll. And then there are three teams that receive votes. Wisconsin, Nebraska, and Penn State all kind of clumped in that 28-31 range. Is that kind of where you thought Penn State fit nationally at 31? Or do you think they should be higher, lower? Where do they sit?
I guess that's two different questions for me. So I'll kind of separate it out for you. The thing that I would say is that given our record, assuming that there were no sanction issues, I would expect a 5-2 Penn State team, particularly in a year where there are plenty of 2-1 loss teams already at this point, to be somewhere between 18 and 25. The fact that they're a little lower doesn't particularly surprise me. I think given who we've lost to, Ohio's a good team, but people still don't really know about them yet.
Ohio's 23rd in the AP poll, if that changes your answer.
Not particularly. I mean, I still think they're still flying under the radar to a certain extent. Certainly, they're not getting the kind of press that a non-BCS conference team like Boise or TCU would get in their situation. So, I mean, that's a very different circumstance. The Virginia loss is a really bad loss. It makes us look awful, which is a good enough reason for me for people to hold us out of the top 25. Assuming that you're looking at the rankings as a ranking over the course of the season and taking into account the entirety of the season as a whole. If you're looking at the way teams are playing right now, I honestly don't believe that there are five better teams playing in college football than this team right now.
You mean in the Big Ten?
Yeah, anywhere in college football, legitimately.
Oh, you mean kind of like a snapshot right now?
If it was a snapshot right now, this team should be ranked and should probably be ranked somewhere around, I'll be conservative and say somewhere around 10 to 15. If you're looking at the way teams are playing at this very moment.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. It's just, it's tough to overlook, especially as a voter, the two early losses, especially, like you said, the Virginia loss, especially when there's, I don't know what, 10 undefeated teams in the country right now. It'd be tough for me to put them that high. I think they belong in the Michigan area of 20 or so. Those two losses that we have to whom they are is what is keeping us from being a little bit higher. You know, a win this week and maybe that vaults us into the top 25 and even maybe the top 20.
I think it probably puts us at around 18 to 20. It'll be a lot easier to overlook a loss to a team like Virginia if we can beat Ohio State. I mean, that's just natural. Ohio State has been, they've struggled a little bit in a couple of wins, but they're still 8-0. They're a very good football team. We're lucky to get them at home, I think. I think that's a real advantage for us. Although I guess you could make the argument that it apparently didn't matter when we were at Kinnick last weekend, so maybe it wouldn't matter if we were at Ohio Stadium this weekend. But
well, it didn't matter last year when we were at Ohio Stadium.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think it'll be a lot easier to overlook a bad loss when you have a really good win on your record like that. So,
I agree. And that's a good segue for us. We kind of burned through a couple of topics really quickly, and that's just because we want to get into our guest who's graciously holding on the line for us. This is obviously one of the biggest games of the season, if not the biggest, just because of the opponent and where the opponent sits and the kind of the drama surrounding both programs. So with that, we're going to bring on Matt Brown, who is a senior writer at Land Grant Holy Land. It's the SBN Ohio State blog. It's relatively new. It is one of the great places to get some Ohio State Buckeye information. For as much shit as our two fan bases like to give each other, they actually do a very good job over there, much better than their predecessors along the Olentangy. So, Matt, welcome aboard, and we're glad to have you.
Thanks, guys. I'm thrilled to be on.
All right. Well, before we get into the actual game ahead of us on Saturday, for our halftime topic, let's discuss Ohio State, their first 8 games. Give us kind of a quick rundown. Are you pleased? I mean, it's tough not to be pleased at 8-0, but you've had some very good wins, like Nebraska. You've had some scary wins, like Purdue and Michigan State. What's your take on the season so far? Where do you think you should be in terms of could you have blown these teams out and you just had some bad days? You know, what's your take so far?
You know, and obviously, whenever you're undefeated at this point in the season, I think you have to be pretty happy as a fan. I think what a lot of people take for granted is that a lot of the key personnel on this team are leftovers from a squad that went 6-7 last year. Last year's Ohio State team was not but it was not good by Ohio State standards. It wasn't really good by, you know, football team standards. And, you know, I think the Ohio State fan base understood it was going to take some time to get used to Urban's new system, which was just, is completely diametrically opposed to what we've seen under the Tressel era. And then also to restock our talent. We there were a couple of not as good recruiting classes as far as OSU is concerned, and that kind of put us a little bit behind the eight ball. So to see the kind of improvement, especially on offense, over the eight games has been outstanding for OSU fans. I think over the last couple of years, we've really forgotten that the Ohio Stadium scoreboard goes above 30. And so to see us hang, you know, 50 back-to-back weeks for the first time since, I think, maybe 96 when we rung up 72 points on Pittsburgh and then 70 on Rice, is really huge. I think, you know, you'd like to beat Indiana by double digits, after you've been doing that for a decade. But really, I mean, if you're kind of picking nits, if you're at 8-0.
So it seems like Penn State and Ohio State and these stories have been written all week long, but they really are in a similar boat, not even taking into consideration the off-the-field drama issues, but in terms of the new system that's in place for the coaching staff, the offensive philosophies. You mentioned that the Ohio Stadium scoreboard goes over 30, and I heard Adam laugh in the background just because, you know, that's a similar mindset that Penn State fans have had in recent years, because, like he said earlier, we would hope that the opposing team didn't score more than 6 because we didn't think we would score more than 7. It's a fun new
on
era.
A good day.
Yeah, 7. Sometimes we only scored 4 if we were playing Iowa. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's, is it a new era in terms of philosophies in Columbus? Is it really that much of a marked shift in offensive scheming?
I mean, yeah, I think the biggest change, if not scheme, is definitely in aggressiveness. Tressel was famously conservative both in his play calling with his emphasis on not taking any risks, and Urban, just like O'Brien, is certainly not afraid to go for it on fourth down, not afraid if he gets the ball back with a minute 30 left in the half to try and go and grab some points. Not afraid to go hurry up and really kind of push the pace. And that's something that I think OSU fans have really been clamoring for a while. And now that we finally have it, I mean, that kind of approach is going to put some extra pressure on your defense, but it's definitely a lot more exciting, dynamic football. Kind of playing against type here for the Big Ten, I think that's really important for our program to continue to bring in the kind of talent that we need to be successful nationally.
Right, and speaking of bringing in that talent, you're welcome for Armani Reeves, Cam Williams, Joey O'Connor, Tommy Shutt, Noah Spence, although he was never committed. Am I missing anybody?
I think that gets, you know, that's most of them. And really, for the other coaches in the Big Ten, I'm afraid that that is something that's probably going to be an annual occurrence. Really, nobody's safe anymore. Urban is coming after you and your football-playing children.
Yeah, and we discussed this earlier, and I don't think I have a problem with that. This so-called gentleman's agreement that once existed, I think that was a relic of years past. I certainly wouldn't blame Urban for coming after a Penn State recruit, because I would expect Bill O'Brien to go after an Ohio State recruit.
Oh, God, no. Yeah.
I think there's a difference between, I think, maybe not a huge difference, but in my mind, there's a difference between going after a recruit like Urban might have, and then, you know, doing what Tim Beckman did and sending, you know, 24 coaches to your parking lot,
right,
trying to get some guy. I mean, even to me, that kind of feels sort of skeevy. But we might be seeing a new normal in Big Ten recruiting, especially as you know, coaches over at Michigan State and Wisconsin realize they're going to have to keep up in the arms race.
Right.
Yeah, that can only be good for us too, I think, as a conference. Our fan base doesn't love the Big Ten, I suppose. At least there's a certain segment of our fan base that doesn't love the Big Ten. But,
sure,
you know, honestly, what's good for the Big Ten is good for us at this point. And, you know, for marquee teams like Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, to keep up, to stay ahead of the curve of the rest of the teams in the Big Ten, and to stay in line with teams like Alabama, LSU, and Florida in the SEC, and Texas and maybe not Texas the last 2 years, but Texas and Oklahoma in the Pac-12 or in the Big 12, and in Southern Cal and Oregon. You know, we're going to need to recruit hard and stop thinking about, oh, well, this is a gentleman's agreement and this is how this conference plays, and but we're very focused on the Big Ten. This is one part of a big shift in thinking for all of the programs, and particularly the three marquee programs of the Big Ten. New coaches, a new outlook, and it's really been a long time coming, I think.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely going to be a lot of fun the next couple of years, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, then let's get right into the game at hand. We've got Matt on for the next two quarters, so for the listeners, you can probably assume that we're going to talk about this game for both of those, and we're going to split that up to offense-defense. Let's do the non-strength versus non-strength first. The Nittany Lions offense is definitely not the strength of the Nittany Lions team, and the Buckeyes defense, while strong, isn't necessarily, or it is their best part, so I guess we're doing it, we're kind of merging them together, but if you look at the stats, the Penn State total offense versus the Ohio State total defense, it's right around average. Penn State's 59th in the country in total offense, and Ohio State's defense is 65th, so a slight edge to Penn State. And then the other categories are kind of split. So let's start with Matt. When the Lions come out on offense with a hot Matt McGloin, a hot Bill Belton, and Zach Zwinak in the backfield, Allen Robinson, who's doing work, what can they expect to see across the ball with the 11 defenders that the Buckeyes are going to put out there?
So I think right now the kind of the hot meme on the internet is that Ohio State's defense is a tire fire in its entirety. And I really don't think that's true. I think if we're going to pick on one particular unit for OSU, that it's going to be the linebackers. But OSU brings in really some very strong talent on the defensive line. I think Penn State is going to struggle a little bit, or certainly can struggle a little bit, trying to run the ball up the middle. John Simon and Jonathan Hankins are both people who are capable of being high NFL draft picks. And are, you know, they're huge guys. They've been able to clog the middle very well. The stats aren't perhaps as eye-popping as Buckeye fans would like as far as sacks or tackles in the backfield. But I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Hankins and Simon are just getting double covered, and linebackers have not been able to take advantage of the favorable coverage.
Okay, so yeah. I agree with that. Collier, do you think that the front five of Penn State, who's played relatively admirably so far, and then coupled or kind of in conjunction with the tight end and the jumbo sets that they run, do you think that they can handle the strong defensive front of Ohio State?
I think that's going to be the key to the game. And I would be surprised if Simon comes out and rips off four sacks. But I think whether that's in the beginning of the game, if they're not really sure what's going to be coming, or if OSU kind of mixes in some corner blitzes or something, I think the pressure is definitely going to be something that I would expect as a Buckeye fan. If we're not able to put any pressure with those three guys and have to resort to sending in lots of blitzes, I think we're going to be in for a long night.
Adam, what do you think about the at least the front line versus the front line?
Our offensive line has been surprisingly good. No more evident than against Iowa last week, where it seemed like Matt had somewhere around 10 seconds to throw every time he dropped back. It was really nice to see. I think it'll be interesting. I guess I'm not so sure that we're going to keep in tight ends to deal with the front four of Ohio State. What I think is more likely is that those tight ends run patterns against a linebacking core, which has struggled.
Right.
Supposed to be the right term.
And
I think that's a matchup problem for Ohio State.
But, I think I agree, because I've read a limited amount, and Matt, you can certainly speak to it better than I can, but this, like you said, it's kind of a mash unit. It's all over the place. They've got a converted fullback. They've got a freshman. We've seen Spence back there, at least one. I don't know how many more you guys have played, but the linebacking core seems to be where the Penn State offense can hit them, especially with the way that the Bill O'Brien game plans on offense, with the kind of the shallow screens, the crossing routes with the tight ends, and the out patterns. And is that something that's where Bill O'Brien's going to win his game?
I mean, that's got to be what keeps the you know, Luke Fickell up at night. The you know, being bubble screened to death, being short passed to death, you know, tight end dump offs. That's what's killed OSU more than anything. I mean, I would imagine that Storm Klein's name is circled right now with a red pen as somebody that Penn State's going to try and pick on. Now, to be fair, I think of all the teams that we've faced so far, Michigan State is probably the closest schematically to Penn State, and not saying that they're identical, but you know, more so than maybe UAB or an Indiana or Nebraska that's running a spread. And during that game, OSU's linebacking corps actually did the best. Whether they're able to carry that into Penn State kind of remains to be seen. But I would be certain that attacking those guys with tight ends or even with a third or fourth wideout if they can get away with it would be a good strategy.
Yeah. Matt, how vulnerable is the Ohio State defense to the deep ball? Because that's something that we've had, we've been pretty hit or miss on this year. And I think, interestingly enough, the O'Brien offense has no qualms about trying to put together 15-play drives if that's what they need to do to get the job done. But it would be nice if we were able to take advantage of a weakness that way and score points throwing down the field.
Yeah, you know, I, as a fan, I think I am more concerned about OSU giving up a deep ball than continually giving up 15-play drives. You know, in just about every game this season, Ohio State has been gouged at some point, whether that's a sweep where somebody misses a tackle or just a broken coverage that goes for a 75-yard gain. That's happened in almost every game. It's the first play from scrimmage against Purdue. Indiana did it a couple of times. Nebraska did it. We have our safeties and our corners are people who are going to be able to pick the ball off. They're going to be and they might gamble a little bit. But if you keep on trying to channel your inner Grossman and keep throwing it downfield, I would think that your odds are pretty good you're going to get them at least one.
Okay.
So we're looking for the McGloin Robinson effect to take place at least once or twice. I mean, he'll get his out route yardages and catches, but I know McGloin likes to give it one or two shots down the field, and if they can get in, into the next level behind a safety, behind a corner, or kind of get a mix match going, I think that McGloin could probably hit that once or twice.
Yeah.
So that I guess that's something we got to look out for, and that's ironic because that's part of the weakness on the Penn State secondary or the Penn State defensive side is the secondary. Who's the corner that will kind of be targeting Allen Robinson as the key, the wide receiver? What's the matchup there, and do you have a lot of faith in whoever your shutdown corner may be?
I think the best of the bunch for OSU is probably Bradley Roby. He's had some picks. He's had some great breakups and defensive plays. He's probably less likely to be burned than Travis Howard or CJ. But it could still happen. And I think it kind of goes back again to the OSU's front three, front four, their ability to get pressure. If McGloin's going to have 9, 10, 11 seconds to throw, I don't think we have people who are shut down corners enough that are going to be able to stop him for that long. If we can keep that where he's never able to get totally comfortable, he's not able to check down to his third or fourth guy, then I think we can be okay.
Okay, now what about coaching? Penn State's offense is run by their head coach, Bill O'Brien. He's done an effective job so far, at least certainly the last five games. He's come into his own. He's figured out what he can and can't do. Luke Fickell runs the Ohio State defense. He's also a young guy, head coach for a little bit last year. Where is he at schematically? Can he keep up with an NFL mind such as Bill O'Brien? Do you think that's a disadvantage, an advantage, or kind of a push?
I know that. I mean, there are Buckeye fans right now that are dumping on Fickell, and I don't think that's particularly warranted. He's somebody who's had a good record at Ohio State at developing talent, and right now we're just really paper thin, and the linebackers and even our defensive backfield are kind of walking wounded, and so I expecting an Ohio State defense that's going to give up 8-9 points a game, I don't think is terribly realistic. I don't go into any game right now thinking we're at a schematic disadvantage with him or Everett Winters. So I would consider that a push. We've seen a lot of different offenses this year, and I think this team is probably more built to defend against a more pro-style, NFL-style offense than it is a spread, just given kind of our speed problems on the outside. So that matchup is not something I'm terribly worried about.
All right, Adam, what do you think? Does Bill O'Brien, you know, has he got his proverbial shit together that he can come in and find the matchups that are most favorable, or is it going to be another Penn State, Ohio State pucker fest?
Well, I don't think it'll be that. I feel pretty good about O'Brien against Fickell. Fickell's a good coach. I don't think you can really argue that necessarily, but I do think O'Brien has the chops to take that kind of matchup. I expect it to be more difficult to score on Ohio State than it was against Iowa. I don't think anybody should be surprised at that. I would expect us to score around 28 points-ish, and I think it's going to win in type scenario.
All right, well, we'll get to the full predictions later on, but let's do some kind of sub-predictions right now. Adam, we'll start with you as the Penn State man. Penn State's pass offense versus Ohio State's pass defense and Penn State's run offense versus Ohio State's run defense. Give it a Penn State, a push, or an Ohio State advantage?
I think our passing offense is an advantage compared to Ohio State. I think it'll probably be a push in the running game, which will have some effect on the passing game and not as much.
Okay. Matt, what do you think?
I mean, I definitely think that, you know, especially how the way that Penn State's looked the past couple of weeks, their passing game is definitely an advantage over our passing defense. I do like our ability to contain the Penn State running game, you know, outside of maybe one, which, you know, kind of seems to be our habit, one particularly blown play that should go for 3 yards and ends up going for 37. You know, other than one or two of those, I feel confident that we'll be able to make McGoin beat us, which he may very well do.
Yeah, that's a dangerous proposition for a Penn State fan.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump to the other side of the ball, and let's let Matt talk about the Ohio State offense versus the Penn State defense. What are we going to see? I mean, we obviously know what we're going to see out of the quarterback if he's healthy, but talk about where Braxton Miller is at and what else we could expect to see from the Ohio State offense.
Sure. So, according to some reports that came out about 2 hours ago, it looks like Miller's going to start. They're not expecting to change the play calling or play style at all. Miller didn't have a concussion. It was just some really nasty whiplash. I guess he hadn't been hurt like that before. He was pretty scared, though. You know, obviously, given how important he is to our offense, we made sure to get him to the hospital. But he's gone through all the practice drills. His neck's feeling better, which is huge. I mean, not that our backup QB didn't do a great job, but obviously, given how dynamic Miller is, and maybe how there isn't really a plethora of outstanding wideouts. Having a healthy Miller is absolutely critical. I think ideally we don't want to run Miller 22 times. If we can keep Miller's rushing attempts to 10 to 12, I think that's a huge win. But you know, Urban's going to do whatever he has to win the game. And if nobody's open and Miller is able to, you know, dart around the side and get 13 yards, that's what he's going to do.
Is it the same Miller that people are expecting though? I mean, is Ohio State fans have this image of Braxton Miller in their head that is, you know, maybe the play breaks down or he can't find an open receiver and he gallops for, you know, for 20 yards. But is he going to come out kind of tentative coming off the injury? Is he going to be the same guy?
You know, and really the last couple of games, Ohio State in general has been kind of tentative in the first quarter. The offense has really been pretty slow. I would not be surprised at all if, you know, the first two drives are 3 and out, or maybe we're looking at the early second quarter and OSU's got like one first down and 22 yards. That's had to happen in Nebraska. It happened in Purdue, and Nebraska will be uncorked 63 points. Definitely, probably in the second quarter after, you know, kind of seeing what he's going to be up against, I don't think there's going to be any doubt that if the play breaks down and he's got a chance, he's going to go for it. If the Miller is trying to just stay at the pocket passer, I think we're in trouble. But that's not really his game.
So what are we looking at up front? If you're talking about the play breaking down, is it the offensive line? And if not, what can the front four/six of Penn State, depending on what kind of pressure they bring, what can they expect to see out of the the offensive line. Is it a strong unit for the Buckeyes, or is it kind of a thin as well?
You know, I don't think it's an elite unit. One thing that we've really been lucky with, considering how bad the rest of this team has been with injuries and where our depth situation is, we've really been pretty lucky with offensive line health. Reed Fragel, Marcus Hall, Corey Linsley, these guys have performed well. Miller has typically not has had enough time either to get to a second or third progression or to be able to roll out on a designed run. If there's a sack, I think it's usually holding on to the ball too long rather than not having the proper protection. I don't think they played exceptionally well during Purdue for the last week. There wasn't really enough of a push for the run game, but that's a unit that I feel comfortable with.
Adam, does Mowdy or Hodges spy Miller, or is it something that you kind of take it play by play because of the injury he's coming off of? Or is he just too dangerous? You kind of have to keep an eye on him every single play.
I think you got to keep an eye on him. He's going to try and do something every play. And even an 80% Braxton Miller is more athletic and more dynamic than almost every other quarterback in the Big Ten. So whatever kind of schematic trick that you have to do to make sure that he doesn't get to that second level when he's running, I think you got to do it.
Adam,
I think he's going to have a good game. Look, if he's healthy enough to play, then I'll preface this by saying that after seeing the hit that he took and watching him struggle, I'm concerned for his health, if only because I think he's going to get hit very hard at some point during this game. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. That's the way this team plays defense. And you never want to see anybody get hurt. Certainly, you didn't want to see him get hurt last weekend, and you certainly don't want to see him get hurt this week. If he's healthy enough to play, which everybody says he is, I'm willing to accept that. And if he's healthy enough to play, then I think he's going to have a good game. And I think you have to spy him with probably Hodges, who's the most athletic linebacker we have. And if you're going to spy him, you have to spy him until you really believe that he poses no significant threat, which will be almost never, unless he's injured. And in that case, you're going to have Hodges on him. What I do think is that Miller's a good enough player to beat Hodges or anybody who's buying him. I wouldn't say on a regular basis, but I think, they'll battle for the draw, but for the most part. But I'm fairly certain that Miller's going to break a big run in this game. Wouldn't surprise me at all to see him break a 50-yard run. He's athletic. He's fast. He's got some moves. And he can beat you with his legs. That's my biggest concern for Miller, frankly, is that I'm less concerned about the rest of the team or the rest of the offense than I am concerned with him.
Right, but like Matt was saying earlier, he's comfortable with the Ohio State rush defense giving up that one big play to Bill Belton or Zach Zwinak, the 37-yarder when it should have been three. How comfortable are you giving up that one or two Braxton Miller breakaways that you know are going to happen, provided you can contain him the rest of the game?
Assuming it's one or two, that's not a problem. It becomes less of a problem for me, even less of a problem for me, if we can keep him in check in the passing game, which I think we can do, provided that we're able to keep him in the pocket the vast majority of the time. I feel good about it. I feel better about this game and this performance now than I did several weeks ago after watching them defend against Northwestern, who has a tremendously athletic backfield, who are very fast and capable. I was concerned after watching us deal with Tettleton and watching him run the zone read in the second half of the Ohio game. I'm less concerned now, if only because I think the team has seen it and has been able to adjust to it. But I'm okay with giving Miller a big play or two, provided it's a big play or two, right, and not six big plays or seven big plays, or he's the one that's consistently making big plays on third down. That's what I would be concerned about.
Right, Matt. The Ohio State offense is ranked 10th in rushing and 104th in passing, and the 10th in rushing obviously has a lot to do with Braxton Miller. If Braxton Miller can be contained into the pocket, for a variety of reasons, including injury or Penn State just scheming properly to keep him contained. Are you even more concerned about the outcome of the game if he has to beat you with his arm?
I mean, that's definitely not the optimal situation for Ohio State to have Miller just stay in the pocket, get 25, 30 yards rushing. And I mean, I don't think that we're going to see, you know, Miller try to chuck it 40 times unless Penn State goes up, you know, 21-0 in the, you know, in the, by the mid-second quarter, and then we have to. I think it would be erroneous to think that he's really the only guy on offense that can make plays. Carlos Hyde has really kind of come out into his own the past couple of weeks to provide a really dynamic 1-2 rushing punch. Jordan Hall, who came into the season as the number one back, is not going to play. They're talking that they might medical redshirt him. But Rod Smith, who had a big touchdown a couple of weeks ago. And all three, and that really kind of creates a dangerous three-headed rushing attack, whether that's for zone reads, whether that's Miller scrambling to find ways to get Hyde and Smith into space. You know, if you look at the yardage, I think Ohio State's passing game looks a lot worse than it is, but if you're able to effectively run for 225, 250 yards that we've been able to do in the past couple of games, there's no real point to throw the ball 20 times. I mean, I don't think OSU is going to run like on Penn State like they did on Nebraska, but they're definitely capable of making more plays in the passing game than perhaps just a cursory look at the box score might present.
Okay. Well, this is definitely strength versus strength in terms of scoring. The Ohio State scoring offense is doing 39 a game. Penn State scoring defense is less than 16 a game. Both are in the top 25 of their respective categories. So let's get to the sub-ranking or sub-predictions again. And let's go start with Matt. Ohio State's passing offense versus the Nittany Lion passing defense and the Ohio State rushing offense versus the Penn State rushing defense. Who wins either match, or is it a push?
You know, it's tough. I mean, if we're taking Miller away and we're just looking at this as a more conventional rushing attack, I would probably put the Penn State front seven as a slight advantage to push. I'm not really sure, really, about how the passing game is going to work out. I think that really kind of depends on whether it's something that is going to be used as a supplement to the run or something that's primarily that needs to be the primary offensive weapon. Knowing that's not really the strength of Penn State, I guess it would probably be a push. If Ohio State has to chuck the ball 40 times a game, that's probably an advantage to Penn State.
Adam, what do you think?
I think Matt's probably right. I feel good about our defense right now. I think they're playing almost lights out. I should clarify, it's not that I'm not concerned about anybody else on the offense, but I do think that we're capable of containing most of the very good players on offense that we see. My concern, my biggest concern, and I'm certain Ted Roof and Bill O'Brien's biggest concern, is containing Braxton Miller. I'll call it a Penn State advantage, but I really think Miller's going to make a bunch of plays, and that's my caveat, and it makes me wonder if it's really still an advantage after that.
Yeah, I mean, Miller is really, really like the point guard of this offense. If he's able to get a couple of plays, that really just opens things up for everybody else.
That's exactly what I'm thinking.
Absolutely. Probably Devin Smith is the only player on is the guy that's dynamic enough and athletic enough to go out and just get a play by himself. You know, he's somebody that's going to be able to get behind coverage and can get a deep bomb. He's also capable of dropping two of those. But if Miller's able to get around and move around the pocket a little bit, that's gonna really open up things for Corey Brown, for Stoneburner, for Hyde, and that's what really makes things tough on any defense, even a really very strong one like Penn State.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you have it. That's some pretty good coverage for all around the football that you can expect to see on Saturday. And let's get to the nuts and bolts here. I kind of have a feeling where each of you are going to pick for the victor, but I'm anxious to hear scoring just based on what we heard about defenses and offenses recently. But let's start with Adam. What's your final prediction?
All right, so I said a little earlier, I think Penn State scores around 28. I'm going to hold to that. I think that's right. I think they'll see a couple big plays, but they'll put together several strong drives. to, I think they'll probably put together two strong, long drives. They'll get a turnover in positive territory that'll lead to a score. Sam Ficken will probably miss a field goal, and we'll get one decent drive, but certainly not a, a 15-play, 86-yard drive to score. So 28, and I think Braxton Miller is going to break a big play or two that'll probably lead to scores. I think we'll probably have a special teams foul up somewhere along the line. I'm looking at somewhere between 21 and 24 for Ohio State, dependent. But I feel pretty good about our chances in this one. I'm not nearly as confident as I have been the last 2 weeks, really the last 3 weeks, including Illinois. But I said before, I thought this team was ready to go on a major roll. They've proven me right so far, so I'm hoping that that keeps up.
All right. Well, yeah, I think that was about on par with what you've been saying. So let's switch over to Matt. What do you think the final score is?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty fair. And you know, I would expect Penn State to probably score somewhere between 21 and 30 points. You know, I saw a couple of predictions for this looking like a 42-17 or the 42-20. I mean, Ohio State's not Iowa. I'm going to be completely shocked if this game was a blowout. Ohio State's big play capability, even if they're not able to string together lots of consistent drives, is going to be enough to get them a bunch of points. One thing that we haven't talked about that I think really could be a big factor in this game is special teams. And that's something where I am pretty confident that Ohio State has a significant advantage, not just in their ability to kick field goals, but Ohio State really tries to get after punt blocks or punt returns. And so I think a big play on there, whether that's blocking a Penn State kick or getting a big return, is going to be able to set up some points. And I think OSU will win this one around 30-26.
All right. Well, I can promise you it was no mistake that we did not talk about special teams on a Penn State podcast.
Well, we don't play special teams.
Yeah, I don't think we have ever played special teams in the past 12 months. So I'm going to throw it out there. It's going to be close. It's not going to be the 17-10, 14-10 games that we've seen in the past, but it's going to be more high scoring, which is good. I like scoring. I don't like the Big 12 Nintendo scoring, because that's not real football, but I like where this is likely headed, and I'm going to give Penn State the edge just because I have to, and I'm going to say it's going to be 31-27, and it's going to come down to the final drive, be it a final Penn State game-winning drive or a Penn State defense stop as time runs out. It's going to be exciting regardless. I will be actually in Cleveland, Ohio, so I'll be in the state of Ohio, watching it, cheering on the Penn State Nittany Lions. So if you are in Cleveland, come find me. And if you're rooting for the blue and white, I'll buy you a beer. If you're rooting for the scarlet and gray, I'll probably still buy you a beer, but I won't like it as much.
I hear the Cleveland rocks. That's what I've heard.
Yeah, Cleveland does rock sometimes, maybe, as you're leaving. So I want to
know. I think Cleveland's underrated. I'm a Columbus guy, but I think I do feel like people dump unfairly upon the great city of Cleveland.
Yeah, it gets a lot of shit, but it does have a lot of good times. My brother lives downtown. We have a great time going out downtown on East 6th or East 4th or whatever the hell it's called.
Mm-hmm.
We have a great time down there, so I don't mind going to visit, but I certainly don't mind leaving.
several years ago, I was in Cleveland for a conference. All I remember is I was there for 4 days. I went out with a buddy of mine who was a fraternity brother who lived in Cleveland at the time. It was like early summer, and we were at several rooftop bars, which I was surprised to know existed in Cleveland, including one that had, the machines that sell Jaeger, but in the, like, they're essentially tap machines,
yeah,
like Jaeger Cold. They had one with tequila, and that was a really interesting
game. Yeah, there goes that night.
I've had a one. I respect the game.
and on that note, on Collier's alcoholic note, we want to thank Matt from Land Grant Holy Land. Go check him out. I'm sure they'll have some great stuff leading up to the game, and hopefully they'll have some conciliatory stuff on Sunday and Monday. For those of you who didn't see, Luke Zimmerman, who runs Land Grant Holy Land, and I made a bet where the loser of the game has to go on the other person's site and write a 250-word thesis on how much they love the other team. So hopefully Luke will be showing up on Black Shoe Diaries on Monday telling us how much he loves Penn State. And with that, thank you, Matt, for coming on.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
And Adam, it was great to see you again, and everybody else, we'll see you next week.
Always. Thanks a lot, Matt. Really enjoyed it.